The Transportation Committee will come to order. We do have a quorum present, and members, we've got a long list of bills to do here. We're going to meet the first portion in the policy division and then take a brief recess, change the tape, and go into the budget division. First up is Senator Scogin, Senate File 2662. Senator Scogin, you have a delete everything amendment. Senator Scoy moves to delete all amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion does prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, what you have in front of you now with the delete all is a couple of pieces of highway that are going to be turned back to communities. And Eric Radin at the Minnesota Department of Government Affairs is with us. Minnesota Department of Transportation Government Affairs, I'll get it right, to explain the two. One's in Fergus Falls, and I think the other one is up in International Falls, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Rudin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Rudin, MnDOT Government Affairs. And I believe you have copies of the resolutions from Coochin County and from the City of International Falls. As far as we know, there is at this time no controversy associated with either of these turnbacks, and we would appreciate your support.
All right. Senator Scoy would move that Senate File 2662 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion does prevail. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, members.
Senator Gimsey, we've got a couple of your bills, up here now. Senator Gimsey, Senate File 3192. Can we start there?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Senate File 3192 is a license plate bill that we've seen numerous times in this committee, and what this bill will do is allow retired EMTs, emergency medical technicians, to apply for and receive a license plate that is recognizes their dedication to the EMT profession while they were working. What I envision is a plate, and I see that I know we've had some trouble in committee before with the commissioner being assigned the responsibility of designing these plates, and I know that that's in a couple of these bills. And but other than that, what I envision is that this would be just a bill that would say retired EMT on it with that lettering. So. Mm-hmm. I would stand for any questions.
Senator Gimsey, did down there on the where it says the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, in consult with the Commissioner of Health, have you thought about maybe changing that to bring in the Emergency Medical Board? You know, they're the ones that have, you know, broad authority over all of our EMTs. You know, bring them in and let them work with public safety to design the plate, because even though the Department of Veterans Affairs has the experience, they like to deal with veterans' plates is what I'm trying to say. And the Department of Health really, they don't have much to add since EMTs are all under that public safety umbrella anyway. So that's just a couple suggestions that my EMT friends brought.
I had thought about that, Mr. Chair, and I would entertain language that would change that. And
Ms. Bierzowski, she might have some for us.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gimsey, on line 1.23, delete of Veterans Affairs, and on 1.24, delete Commissioner of Health and insert Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board.
I would move that language, Mr. Chair.
On the GMC motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Is there, Senator GMC, do you have anybody that wants to provide testimony?
I don't, Mr. Chairman.
Senator GMC, since this is a new plate, there's going to be a startup cost of approximately $5,000. So I think we better hear from Ms. McCormick. I saw her here. There she is back there. Ms. McCormick, could you come to the table, please? Ms. McCormick, with this additional $10 fee, how many plates do we have to sell to make this a cost-neutral event?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services with the Department of Public Safety. In general, we usually try to, we look at trying to sell about 10,000 plates, but there, we don't usually sell that many, but we haven't been asked to do a fiscal note on this bill at all, so I really don't have those numbers here for us. It amounts to us costing money like $5,000, like you were mentioning, to start it up, and then depending on the volume and how quickly the volume is reached is how we make the money up in the appropriation that we have to do plates, to manufacture plates.
Ms. McCormick, how long would it take to put a fiscal note together? Because if this bill passes out of here, it goes to finance, where it's going to have that issue absolutely resolved.
Mr. Chair, if we get a request from management and budget, we can do it. We could turn it around in a day, but it has to come from management and budget for us to do that. We can informally begin on it, so I can talk to my staff about it. So we would be able to turn it around in the day.
Ms. Boyd says that the appropriate request was put in, so I'm sure that it trickled down.
We just haven't received it yet at our level. Okay. All right. I'll ask our finance director when I get back to the office.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Gimsey?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that this bill be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
Is there anybody else that wants to testify on this bill? I see none. Senator Gimsey has moved that Senate File 3192, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Gimsey, now on your next bill, the retired firefighter special plate, Senator Tomasoni has the bill. It's already in finance. You still want to move your bill along, or it's almost exactly the same thing with a couple grammatical changes?
I noticed that, Mr. Chairman, that he does have a bill, and I've read his. I haven't discussed with Senator Tomasoni the differences in our two bills, but what I was hoping to do was to be able to move this one forward maybe reconcile those differences with Senator Tomasoni and possibly just tabling this at some point in time.
Okay. Well, if the committee would want to, we can re-refer this to the Committee on Finance, and we'll just let you and Senator Tomasoni figure out who's going to carry the bill and what it's going to look like, because this is, like I said, almost the exact same thing as Tomasoni's bill. So. Senator Gimsey has moved that Senate File 3193 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Now, Senator Gimsey, work zone speed limits, Senate File 3106, and we've had several discussions about this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in committee, Senate File 3106 is a department bill that would clarify and change some language that is that dates back to the 1990s. As far as back in the 1990s, the speed limit in the, across the state of Minnesota was 55 miles an hour, and it only required the reduction of 15 miles per hour, which is in the law, in order to achieve the safe speed in work zones at 40 miles an hour. What this bill would do, and I'll have Cassandra Isaacson with MnDOT explain it, is allow us to change those speed limits because of the increase up to 60 miles an hour in those work zones and make it more consistent.
Senator Gimsey, before Ms. Isaacson provides testimony, you've got the A1 delete all amendment. Senator Gimsey moves the A1 delete all amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Ms. Isaacson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Cassandra Isaacson. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And as the senator explained, this bill is just simply to clean up some language. As many of you may recall, in 2006, we raised the speed limit on approximately 900 miles of two-lane, two-way highway from 55 miles per hour to 60 miles per hour. And so in statute, it made it mathematically impossible for us to put a valid work zone speed limit on those segments of roadway. And so this bill will make it so that we can put those work zone speed limits up when we have a work zone active on those roads.
Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, Senator Gimsey moves that Senate File 3106 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? I'm sorry. We will backtrack just a little bit. Senator Gimsey moves that Senate File 3106 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Senate floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Ms. Isaacson. Senator Dibble. Senator Dibble, you have a delete all amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, to Senate File 1615. I believe it's the A1 amendment.
Senator Dibble moves the A1 delete all amendment. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion does prevail. Senator Dibble, on the A1 delete all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present Senate File 1615. And Mr. Chair and members, what we're trying to do here is to address a vexing problem. This issue has been in front of this committee and a number of other committees over the past few years. We're fairly familiar with the issues. When folks are who are living here, who are working, who are part of our community, cannot legally drive their vehicles, cannot legally access insurance, public safety is seriously compromised, and our ability to allow for the appropriate interaction of law enforcement with certain communities, the ability of law enforcement to investigate when they need to investigate crime or accidents and the like. Thank you. When they need to investigate crime, accidents, and the like needs to occur. People need to be able to access insurance so that they're covered when they're driving around. The negative consequence to all of us is fairly significant. As things stand now, Mr. Chair and members, we have 12 million people in this country who just, cannot get proper identification, cannot get driver's license, cannot get car insurance. And we have some policies in place that are trying to address another problem that's a much larger problem. And it's counterproductive, and it's not anything that we can solve at the state level. And that's, of course, the problem of immigration, legal immigration, and the like. There have been a number of efforts to address this at the federal level. And that's really where it needs to be addressed. And I know there's going to be a renewed push to do that. So what this bill does, Mr. Chair, is to try to allow some mechanism for folks to be able to provide proof of who they are with legally defensible documents that are up to the kind of standards that we would want to see. That's what you see on lines 2 to 24. Make sure that these are folks who are, in fact, living in our state so that, you know, the kind of incidents like we saw happen out in greater Minnesota, you know, where there's a lot of questions about what really happened with that accident, who was driving, et cetera, you know, we can just really get to the bottom of those without lingering questions like that. Law enforcement, and you see the quotes that are coming around, the law enforcement profession believes strongly that this is the right kind of policy to pursue. It makes all of us a lot safer, and it allows folks to interact more positively with our larger community. With that, Mr. Chair, we have some folks who are ready to testify. Oh, sure. We're going to have a little translation, so I'm going to switch.
Buenas tardes a todos. Mi nombre es María Cisneros. Soy un miembro del grupo de Mujeres en Liderazgo.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is María Cisneros, and I am a member of Women in Leadership.
El propósito por el que estamos aquí,
the reason that we're here today,
es porque queremos un acceso de licencias de manejar para todos.
Is because we want access to driver's licenses for everybody.
Es para la seguridad de nuestras comunidades, familia y la seguridad de carreteras aquí en Minneapolis.
This is for the safety of our families, our communities, and the streets across Minnesota.
Es muy importante porque, por ejemplo, ahorita también está afectando mucho la transportación en las escuelas públicas.
And this is really important, especially now when we're seeing issues with transportation with public schools.
Están quitando transportación en diferentes escuelas por falta de la economía.
That they're taking away transportation from public schools because of the economy.
Y si todas las comunidades tuvieran el acceso a tener una licencia de conducir, se puede llevar a los hijos a la escuela.
And if everybody had access to driver's licenses, then parents would be able to bring their children to school in these situations.
Tener mejores trabajos.
People would have access to better jobs.
También se podría, por ejemplo, tener mejor, al tener la licencia de conducir, se puede tener más acceso a tener una aseguranza de carro y también aportar a la economía.
And that if there was access to driver's license for everybody, then everybody would be able to get car insurance, and that would improve also the economy.
Es importante porque, por ejemplo, si el problema al no tener el acceso de una licencia de conducir, no nomás nos afecta a la comunidad inmigrante, nos afecta a toda la comunidad aquí en Minneapolis.
That currently the lack of access to driver's license does not only affect the immigrant community, it affects the entire community in Minnesota.
Y es por eso que pedimos su apoyo para tener el enfoque es la seguridad aquí en Minneapolis.
And that's why we look for your support today, because what we really are looking for is the security of our community.
Y es importante su apoyo, más que nada, porque al obtener una licencia de conducir, pues tenemos también familias más seguras, porque también así se tiene al tener el acceso, se va a tener las reglas de cómo manejar.
And that this issue is important for us too, and we need your support as well, because if everyone has access to driver's license, then everyone is going to be able to be well trained in understanding the rules about how to be a driver in Minnesota.
Y sabemos que la licencia de conducir no es un gusto, es una necesidad para todas las familias.
And we know that driver's licenses are not a luxury, they're a necessity for our families.
Y es muy importante que nos apoyen todos ustedes.
So it's very important that you support us in this bill.
No sé si tienen preguntas.
If there are any questions.
Well, thank you, Ms. Cisneros, right? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I think we have a couple more folks who want to testify, if we have
okay.
time.
My name is Josefina Franco, and I'm with Mujeres en Liderazgo. And we're working for to work with the Departamento de Policía.
So the police departments, law enforcement officers.
Para mantener nuestra ciudad más segura.
In order to to keep our streets and our city safe.
Y estamos trabajando en una campaña grande que es para para estar de acuerdo con la policía que trabajar en colaboración con ellos para que.
And we are working on something that's a large effort to be able to work in collaboration with police departments and law enforcement.
Para que la comunidad pueda reportar crímenes que le pasen a nuestros vecinos en nuestros vecindarios.
So to be able to report crimes, for example, that happen to our neighbors and in our communities.
Y de esa manera la gente, la comunidad no tenga miedo de acercarse a los oficiales.
So that this is an effort to make sure that our community isn't scared to come forward and talk to law enforcement.
Porque ha habido mucha presión de que las familias sienten miedo de llamar a los oficiales y miran un crimen o un accidente, y esto nos afecta a todos.
Because this has been the case where a lot of our community, a lot of people are scared to come forward when they see something happening, and this affects the safety of everyone in our community.
Y yo en verdad pido al Senado que por favor nos apoye en esto.
And that's why I ask the whole Senate for the support in this.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else?
Yes, hi. Just want to keep it quite brief, but there's just so many important reasons.
Who you are? Just to let you know who you are.
Oh, excuse me. My name is Mike Powers, certified insurance brokers. I'm a producer, insurance, property and casualty producer here in Minnesota.
Sorry.
And basically just want to identify, there's so many reasons basically to increase the amount of insured drivers on the road. But to keep it, you know, quite brief, the importance of accurate records, basically for law enforcement, for accuracy in all the different areas that would go along with that, as well as the more accurate the records, the lower insurance premiums can get overall, you know, industry-wide. The more information, the less risk, the lower the rates. But like I said, it's just so many reasons. Those are just two of the main reasons. Like I say, it can go into a lot of details. But basically just the overall way that insurance, the actuaries are the people who figure out all the numbers and figure out how to provide rates for insurance. The more data that they have, they can predict and be more accurate, which simply as a result of all that can reduce the rates and hone in on things better. And that's about it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. Oh, yeah, don't forget to sign in on our sign-in sheet there, if you would, please. Thank you. Senator Debel?
So, Mr. Chair, those were all the folks that I had to testify. I don't know if other folks wanted to. I'm available to stand for questions.
I think there's one more young woman in the front here that would like to testify.
Thank you for listening today. I'm a mom from Lakeville.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Catherine Crothers. I live in Elko, Newmarket. My children go to 194, and I've taught English as a second language. I did for a year in Minnesota, and I'm a full-time mom now. But I couldn't sit here and not say anything for the kids that I know and their families. I have a child that's going to be getting a driver's license, and he's so excited. He's going to start taking his permit classes. And he has friends that would really like to do the same thing, but they can't. They'd like to be able to get rides to after-school practices, participate in community events, but not all of their parents can drive. So those kids are kind of shut out of a lot of activities. When parents decide to go to a student to a teacher conference and they don't have permission to drive, they put everything on the line to go and learn about how their kids are doing. And I just, it would be really nice if we could remove some of these barriers on behalf of the kids in our community and to make us a better school system and a fuller community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Crothers. Senator Dibble, maybe you can tell us the short and the small about what the delete all amendment does.
Mr. Chair, it provides for on the application for a driver's license, it provides for an affidavit, if you will, a spot where folks can attest that they live in Minnesota and their address. And it provides for folks to provide proof of their identity from documents that are issued by other countries that contain their full name, their date of birth, a photograph, a unique identifying number, and security features to make sure that that particular document is impervious to alteration. As is reasonably practicable, so that, Mr. Chair, there is some confidence. Oh, thanks. So that there's a reasonable confidence that that we have genuine documents, indisputable. So, Mr. Chair, what it does is it allows for folks. Right now, our rules provide for. Proof of legal status in the country, and that's the nut of the problem. We have a lot of folks here who don't have full legal status in the country. They are completely excluded from accessing identity documents or learner's permits or driver's licenses. So we have folks who are working in our community. Mm-hmm. We can agree that's a problem for some and a big problem, and it's an issue that needs to be addressed. But the simple fact is we have tens of thousands, millions of people in this country driving around. They can't buy insurance. They can't get a driver's license and the consequent effects that we discussed earlier. We have John Keller here from the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota. Did you want to testify or respond to questions?
And okay. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, and the only reason I interrupt now is because I'm wondering if maybe we could get a copy of this repealed rule. Because I don't know where I could get a hand. So maybe someone would have.
We've got a couple copies here.
You've got a couple of copies because it would maybe be helpful if we could get some. And the only reason I interrupted, Mr. Chair, so that someone had to have time to make some copies while we listen to testimony.
Senator Dibble.
With your indulgence, we have Mr. Keller who would like to share a few words.
Please.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Keller. I'm the director of the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota. We work representing immigrants from all over the world. We had folks from 91 countries last year, and our work is immigration law. I was asked to provide a few words just from our work and the points of view or the vantage points from which we see this issue. And I want to make a couple things clear. Number one, the issue around driver's licenses for the undocumented is part of the question, but it's also the question of folks who are here with legal status, but status that's temporary. So in that category, we would have, for example, members of our communities from Liberia, the Liberian community, and anyone else on temporary protected status has a driver's license that expires oftentimes in 12-month increments or 18-month increments. It's my belief that if we were to do away with the immigration component of driver's licenses, that all of the folks who are here temporarily, students as well as those who are going to be here for a long time, like the Liberians, many who've been here since 1991, you'd actually be looking at a source of revenue for the state and more secure driver's licenses and fewer folks within the Department of Transportation having to deal with the expiration of driver's licenses for those who are legally here but on a temporary basis. They include students, athletes, persons seeking asylum, persons seeking adjustment of status or green cards through their family members, and then victims of crimes who qualify for U visas. And to finish quickly, this is not the first state that has considered this. There are several other states, and they've looked at primarily safety and the reduction in uninsured drivers, so the fiscal as well as safety costs, including Florida, Utah, New Mexico. And in each of those states, according to a study done by the National Immigration Law Center, the costs for regular folks' insurance has gone down because the uninsured driver component has gone down, and we'd be happy to provide copies of this report to the committee. And then finally, there was a concern in the House hearing that I also attended about the validity of other countries' documents, the basis for which driver's licenses could be prepared here in Minnesota. And from, again, our point of view, we work with people from all over the world, and each country that we work with, for example, the Mexican consulate here in St. Paul, takes its obligation very seriously to create a unique identifier for each of its nationals. We often are the recipient of people who are unhappy because the foreign consulate or embassy is not creating a passport or certifying a birth certificate because they have not been able to show sufficient proof of who they are. So we certainly would be relying on the expertise of foreign countries here in the U.S. if that were the case to certify that those documents are accurate and unique. Mm-hmm. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Keller. Mr. Keller, maybe you can help me with what kind of documents does the Mexican authorities look at when they establish identity?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Mexican consulate, we often work doing outreach and presentations to members of the Mexican national community here in Minnesota, and they have a strict series of protocol. I can't tell you, you know, verbatim exactly what documents they have, but in order to create an internationally verifiable Mexican passport, they require that the birth certificate be both certified from a country, from a Mexican state that can verify that that individual's name and identification do in fact exist in the civil registry in that state. The country of Mexico is a federation just like the United States, so each state verifies to the Mexican officials outside of the state. We've also worked with the consulate of Ecuador. There's now a full-time consular official in Minneapolis from Ecuador who does all of the same work under those same international protocols.
All right. Thank you. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd just like to say I have the highest regard for Mr. Keller. We've worked together before, and I appreciate his insight. Mr. Keller, can you kind of remind us on the committee, because I know we've worked on issues of temporary visas and otherwise and people coming in and getting licenses, and for some reason I thought we worked on that to make it coordinate with the expiration dates of those. Can you tell us how the law works today?
Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer, you are correct. And again, my recollection is that coordination is necessary dating back to the requirement that immigration status is now a component of license, of driver's licenses or Minnesota IDs. And where we see this being a problem, let me just go into very briefly the example of Liberians. Liberians, as many of you know, fled their home country in the early 90s. There's over 1,000 people from Liberia living in the United States, in Minnesota right now, and their status is set to expire on March 31st. Each one of those folks who are dependent on what's called temporary protected status or deferred enforced departure have a driver's license that also expires, a Minnesota driver's license that expires March 31st. Liberians have been going through this situation, as I said, some of them, one of our clients, since 1991. So, you know, status dependent on immigration. Immigration may take up to March 31st or even after March 31st to renew, and then in the meantime they've lost their driving privileges and oftentimes their employment. As I understand the bill, you know, that would no longer be a requirement. And, you know, I contend would not only create efficiencies for folks who are here legally, but through INS or USCIS, less than speedy paperworking are about to lose their driving privileges, but it would also expand the number of people across the state who'd be eligible beyond those legally present.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Keller. Then under the Liberian situation you're talking about, is that an annual renewal then based on that March 31st? And
Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer, Liberians are, at this point, they had a 12-month period of status, and that is set to expire on March 31st. The period prior to that was 18 months. Other countries, there's currently six countries in that similar situation, Honduras, El Salvador, Sudan, Somalia, and I'm forgetting one, but six national countries where we've declared that folks can stay for a temporary period, and oftentimes, like the Liberian situation, it can end up being a decade or more.
Senator Bonham.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, this is a tough one because we know that we need significant immigration reform in our country and that we have many people living in our state and in our country who are not here legally, and we have expressed a commitment to do something about that, whether or not we have a path to citizenship to determine what the outcome is for each of these citizens. We can't do that large process within our state. It has to really come from the federal government. And so I think what we're wrestling with here is, of course, it makes sense that these people, given they're living here, ought to be able to have a higher quality of life than they do today if they can't get around, their children are in schools, they can't attend conferences, and yet we have this portion of our statutes, you know, under subdivision 7, I mean, what just got passed out, the department shall not issue a driver's license, permit, or identification card if an individual has no lawful admission status to the United States. So we're visiting that question, you know, what is the appropriate way to respond to people who are, you know, there's one thing when the issue that's been mentioned with regard to those from Liberia, but we're really talking much broader. We're talking about those who are not here under the legal methods, and so that gets to be kind of an issue around this table. Like, what is, and I don't know, the transportation is the appropriate venue to have that discussion. That's a tough one. And then also, Senator Dibble, could you remind us, I haven't sat on committees that do election law, remind us of how, if a person had this license, how it would be notated whether or not they were a citizen or not a citizen in terms of when they go to register. I'm sure that would be a question on some people's minds.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair and members, Senator Bonhoff, I completely agree with you that transportation is not necessarily the appropriate venue to have this conversation debate, but it's utilized as such, you know, because identity documents relate to transportation and law enforcement, and so a problem is created where there need not necessarily be one. And it's a larger problem that I think both affects the families that we're talking about, but affects, it's in all of our interests because it's, you know, as we heard, it's about public safety and insurance, et cetera. That being said, Senator Moi and I are very familiar with what occurs when someone is not a citizen of the country and they have an identity document, a driver's license, or Minnesota ID card. It's noted on there.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Senator Koch first and then Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dibble, I'm wondering if the Department of Public Safety has a position on your bill, or if you know of, or if they're here.
Pretty sure they're not thrilled about it. I think Ms. McCormick is here. At least she testified in the House hearing. I think she's probably here ready to testify.
We'll hear from Ms. McCormick here in a few minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Watt.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate Senator Bonoff's question, but you know that when we all go vote, nobody is required to show a driver's license or a Minnesota ID card. Because your attestation to your citizenship happens when you fill out your voter registration form. So once you fill out your voter registration form and you send it in, and you show up, your name is there and you sign it. Since we are day of registration, there are a whole other set of documentations that people bring to show, and of which a driver's license alone is not sufficient for day of voter registration to show that you are eligible to vote. Plus, you have to then sign the same voter registration card with an attestation that you are a citizen and eligible to vote. And so for the longest time, even when the voter registration card in Ramsey County in the state of Minnesota was printed in 5 different languages, it was sufficient to do the attestation with voter registration card. So during any election cycle, when you show up, actually, election judges cannot require you to show ID if you have already registered to vote. And you only need to show identification if you're registering to vote the day of. So a lot of people seem to think that somehow if we allow people to drive, that somehow that's going to be fraught with voter fraud. And that's just wrong. It's not true. The other thing I hope that Mr. Keller could speak to, if he has a chance, is that I guess when people talk about the populations that this would benefit, there seems to be a misconception that all of these people massively flooded the borders and just sort of came in. And what I heard from you is that that's only a small portion of the populations for whom this would benefit. In fact, many of the people that are affected by this are people who came with documentations, and because of our broken federal system that is not responsive in a timely manner, we are forcing these people to be in a no man's land in terms of status. So it is our fault that we're forcing these people into that position, and yet we're penalizing them and not allowing them to be able to drive their children to school. And I wonder if you could speak to that.
Mr. Keller.
Mr. Chair, Senator Moi, I travel the state often talking to decision makers and the general public about the broken federal immigration policy that Senator Moi is speaking of. And one of the things that most people don't understand is that the vast majority of folks who reunite legally to the United States do so through a legal family member. About 2/3 of our federal immigration permanent residency applications are done through family petitions. That's the bread and butter of our work. We also have to explain to the general public, just like we do to our clients, that depending on your degree of separation from your family member, that petition can take, on the fastest end, a year and a half, and on the slowest end, 22 years. And that's something that you know, most people don't understand. In the meantime, while somebody is waiting for that legal visa to become current, They have no ability to get a driver's license, which is of concern to this committee and to the rest of the drivers of the state of Minnesota. There truly is, I think, both bipartisan agreement as well as agreement from the professionals working in this area that federal immigration overhaul has to happen to create a mechanism for all of those folks waiting in very, very long lines to be able to come out of the shadows and get some status. The other piece I think that Senator Mula is alluding to is the beneficiaries of this may be the driver of a family who can't yet access that visa. But in addition to that driver, it's the mixed family status we often talk about as well. There are currently in the United States over 5 million U.S.-born children who have one or more parent who's undocumented. So the fact that we now could, in the state of Minnesota, require that parent to go to driver's education or to take the test and to become duly licensed and insured is going to benefit not only the rest of us as drivers, but also the citizen kids riding in the car or in anyone's car.
Thank you, Mr. Keller. Ms. McCormick, could you come to the table, please? Ms. McCormick, Senator Koch was asking what the department's perspective was on Senator Dibble's bill.
Mr. Chair and Senator Koch, for the record, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. The department supports our current rules and our current process. The department does believe that we should enforce the current immigration laws as it relates to legal presence.
Okay. Senator Sieben.
I just have a question. I was looking at what was handed out for what would be repealed, and it looked like in the case of Liberians, for instance, they do have indefinite authorized presence status. So wouldn't they be eligible to get driver's license under the current statutes right now?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, yes, they do. And our department has implemented these rules since 2002. And we work very closely with a lot of immigration attorneys. And in particular, in these temporary status situations such as Liberia, we pay close attention to those dates and look for the government rulings, and we try to accommodate those as best we can. Certainly, I wouldn't disagree with Mr. Keller in what he was saying in terms of there being a backlog in immigration in terms of processing documents. But at the same time, under our current rules, we only require someone to bring in a letter from immigration stating that they have applied for an extension of their visa or whatever it might be, and then we give them a six-month extension. And we do that for as long as we need to. In the case of Liberia and some of the other countries where they have this particular status that's different than in other cases, we commonly do that. And so hopefully as I said, we work with very many immigration attorneys on these particular issues, and we certainly would want to accommodate anyone that was in that kind of situation, and we do it on a regular basis.
Ms. McCormick, maybe you can help us. What would happen if we remove these rules 7410, 0410? The rules that are in place right now that you issue licenses with. It's the repealer that's in the bill. It's what we just passed out, the proof of residency portion.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think from what Senator Dibble said, and he and I haven't had a chance to talk about this amendment at all, but it would appear that the current rules we have would be repealed, and then we would need to develop new rules, which we would probably, I mean, what we would be doing is collaborating in terms of using the rules that are in place and adding additional rules, but I think that would be up to the author's intent and the legislature's intent. I can only speak from reviewing that as to what it means. What this particularly means is that any government ID that was secure and had secure features that provided, from what I'm understanding, a photo so that you could identify that individual, and it couldn't be easily replicated. Sounds like it could be used as a primary document. But since you're repealing all of the current rule and not just amending those rules, it would mean we'd have to start all over again and develop rules and go through a rulemaking process. And there would be we've done a fiscal note on your bill yet, have we, Senator? I haven't seen it yet, I don't think. I think we did on the House version, but we haven't done one yet on the Senate version yet.
Right. That's what Ms. Boyd said. She said the House has a fiscal note on their bill. Ms. McCormick, what about federal compliance? Do we fall out of federal compliance without these rules?
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, right now we're not able to comply with Real ID. And as most of you know, I know I've talked to several members of the committee, the Real ID Act is in flux right now, just as, you know, I think work on immigration law as well. There's another bill that's out there. That bill is called the Pass ID. It's got support from a lot of different organizations. That bill has not been passed in either House and Congress, but that would also, that bill still requires legal presence. At the last time I saw it, I saw a summary of it. I haven't seen any recent copy of it. So,
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just to expand on Ms. McCormick's point about Real ID, we passed a bill unanimously, almost. I think there was one vote against in one of the chambers, and I don't remember which one even, but basically 200-1 we passed a bill. Is it your bill or your bill? prohibiting our compliance with the Real ID. Fortunately, most states agree with us, and most states have the same stance with respect to Real ID because it's akin to developing a national ID regimen that people disagree pretty strenuously with as advisable for the traditions and norms of this country. There are actually two bills under consideration in Congress, Pass ID, which doesn't trigger the same threshold and the same level of concern for ongoing security and cost, et cetera, at the state level, and then another bill that would kind of just let's wipe the slate and let's undertake a negotiated federal rulemaking process so all states are advised and consulted in the new, you know, the new era to protect for interstate and international travel.
Senator Bonhoff and Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, I appreciate your intent behind carrying this bill. I think you're looking at communities filled with people who face enormous challenges, and yet they are in our communities, and you're looking at how can we provide a path so that they are self-sustaining, so that they have jobs, that they can support the children in our community, and certainly independence and being autonomous and able to get around is a key to a sense of self-worth and self-esteem. And so I don't know, again, that this will end up being the place where this ultimately gets addressed, but I appreciate you bringing it forward and raising it to the level of discussion, and I think it merits discussion.
Sir Ma.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, I see in this fiscal note from the other body that there's a $25,000 cost, and in it says that the reason why it's been identified is because the bill, I believe, as introduced, does not define government identification card. I'm looking at the Delete Everything Amendment, and it clearly defines what a government identification card is. So was this fiscal note prepared to the language as introduced, or was this prepared to the new language of the Delete Everything Amendment?
Mr. Chair and Senator Moi, that there wasn't an amendment offered on the House version of the bill. Not at the committee meeting I was at, and we had prepared our fiscal note prior to that hearing. So
Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. Senator Dibble, so was your delete everything amendment into clearly defining government identification data your attempt to address this fiscal cost?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ma, yes, it was. It was responsive to that critique.
Ms. Boyd, did you want to speak about the fiscal note?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator Moy, yeah, I did check the language against, because the fiscal note was prepared to both the introduced and the amended version of the House bill, and I did check the language, and the definition in both was the fiscal note still said in both that the rulemaking would need to be done because of the definition. So what I'm saying is that the language before you in the delete all amendments should match the fiscal note that's done, because the language in the fiscal note in the House was this language.
Oh. Well,
Senator Dibble.
Well, I don't need to defend Ms. McCormick's fiscal note. It's her fiscal note, but as I understand, they continue to maintain that they'll have to do a rulemaking. Mm-hmm. And that's another element that I can't address.
And most of the time when it's a small number like that, Ms. McCormick, we kind of...
yeah.
Turn our head the other way and... Senator Perry.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, I guess my issue with this is, are we willing to send notice across the United States that Minnesota is okay with illegal immigration in their state? Because that's how I view this law. I understand the problems, but, I have always viewed a driver's license as a privilege and a right. Being in the United States is to me a right given when you go through the proper channels. And if you enter the United States improperly, in my mind and many citizens, you have no rights. I'm sorry to say this, but I think my father, who is a 38-year veteran and prisoner of war, would be rolling in his grave right now thinking that the state of Minnesota would send a message that it's okay to be an illegal alien or immigrant in the United States, and specifically in the state that he raised the whole family. And that's where I have an issue. I'm all for sending a note to the federal government to get off your duffs, by golly. Let's move this process forward. Let's shorten the time period. We've already heard that we're taking steps in the department to help these folks through when their term is up or when they need an extension. I certainly don't want to be one that sends that message across the United States that Minnesota welcomes illegals.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
We live in the real world. And unless we're willing to figure out a way to get 12 million, 13 million people out of our country, is simply not going to happen, and I'll add that these are hardworking people who are part of our community, who pay taxes, who fill up our businesses, who many of our businesses serve, and if all these folks were to leave our communities, many of our businesses would immediately go defunct. Then we have a practical, real-world problem to address that affects all of us. It affects our public safety. It affects the safety on the road. It affects our insurance rates. It affects police and law enforcement's ability to interact with members of our community. So we can give speeches about what's right and what's proper, and we agree more than we disagree. We need to deal with legal status of people in our country. But I don't think 12 or 13 million people are going to leave tomorrow, and I don't think there's any practical way to make that happen. It's a fact of life. And the fact is that these are working people who are paying taxes and supporting our businesses in our community, and they're driving around in a condition that's unsafe, driving up all of our insurance rates. So we're trying to live in the real world and solve a practical problem here.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry, then and
Senator
Ma.
Dibble, I'm living in the same world. I understand what you're talking about. What I'm talking about is the stance that we take here. I understand the plight of the folks, and I'm sure every one of the folks sitting behind you are okay to be in this great state and this great United States. I'm sure. Okay? I'm not talking about those folks. I'm talking about the state of Minnesota saying it's okay in the real world that we just forget about the fact that you have to be a citizen to have rights in this country. Because that's a message we're sending. The message we should be sending is we adhere to what is law today. Work with the federal government. If there needs to be a change, that needs to be where it starts. Not in our state. We're doing everything we possibly can under law today to help these folks that are here legally. And I hope that we're not wasting time on those that are here illegally, because that would be a slap in the face of every taxpayer in this state.
Senator Perry, first, first, you're beyond wrong on several of the points that you made. First, a lot of undocumented folks that are in this country have rights already provided by under the United States Constitution and also voted on by a lot of people that have been that served in the U.S. Senate and U.S. House of Representatives that has, I don't know, 200 years of history. There are rights for people who are here that are undocumented. There are rights.
But we would have documents.
Mr. Chair.
Just a minute. There are certain rules in the Senate. One of the rules is there's no applause or sign waving or things like that. But Senator Perry, so there is some legal status for folks who are here that are undocumented.
And we know that, right, Mr. Chair?
And Senator Perry, since I have the floor, I'll do the talking.
Yes, sir.
Great. But the bottom line here is, well, I'm not even going to go there. Senator Dibble, I think that you are probably aware that the committee is not in the position it needs to be to move this bill along, which I, for one, feel is not going to happen this year, may not happen next year, but it's going to happen. That we need to, as Senator Dibble said, there's 12 to 13 and a half million people who are in our borders and are undocumented. Many of these people go to our churches, their kids go to our schools. Most of them pay taxes, Senator Perry. A lot of undocumented workers pay taxes. And if they're willing to go the extra mile, just like our forefathers were when they came to this country, to establish churches, schools, and be part of the community, then we should accept them for that. But I can tell just looking at the committee that this bill's not getting out of here. Senator Dibble, what's your wishes on the bill?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I think, I'll defer to Senator Moi.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moi.
I know, having being a chair, when I ask that question, I know what kind of response I would like from the author out of respect. So before Senator Dibble makes his wishes known, Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like to put just a couple of items on the record per the discussion. I think a lot of people think that somehow our Minnesota's driver's license is should be a national ID card. And I think Senator Dibble alluded to the fact that in a bipartisan, unanimous manner, we the Senate and the legislature has spoken to say that the Minnesota driver's license shall not be a national ID card. So that's resolved. I agree with Senator Perry that having a Minnesota driver's license is a privilege and a right. But it's only a privilege and a right to drive our roads. And the bulk of this committee's work and the Judiciary Committee's work is to impose sanctions on people who have violate those privileges and rights on our roads. So I agree with him, but it is the privilege to drive on our roads, and we impose those sanctions. And as opposed to, I think, a persistent misperception that somehow people who live here, work here, are not patriotic, I guess I just like to say that many of these parents have children who are serving in our armed forces as citizen children. Many of people who are serving in our armed forces, actually, have been, after the fact, been given their citizenship, as did my constituent who was shot and killed as part of the group that died in Fort Hood. That they are given their citizenship after they had sacrificed their lives for this country. And in fact, we have young men and women who are serving this country and defending us abroad who are undocumented. And in fact, after the fact, then they're giving documentation, giving their citizenship after they have spilled their blood. And so I think that the people who live in this country, who serve our country, whether they have the little card that says their citizenship or not, have a tremendous love for this country to the degree where they're willing to give their lives. So I think that to evoke that for some reason that veterans would be opposed to us doing what we're doing today is wrong, because I don't think that that's true. Plus, I also think that it is in our best interest, in our best interest, to give identification cards to the people who live in Minnesota. Our Minnesota driver's license identification cards are to authenticate and give identity to people who live in Minnesota. And I have yet to see where it says in our Constitution that the state of Minnesota, under a state's rights, is under any obligation whatsoever to enforce federal immigration law. We as a state have refused to do it in other areas. I don't know why we are abdicating our state's rights on this issue to the federal government.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't really know how to continue on something that is, it evokes a lot of passion. I'm third-generation American. I'm a veteran, as my father and grandfather were. And I know there were some issues in immigration in our family as well. So it's an issue that evokes a lot of passion on both sides. And there are exceptions to every rule, Senator Ma. There's a lot of good folks that are undocumented. I can't believe that anybody comes to this country to work or find work that doesn't want to support their family and doesn't believe in the American dream, whether documented or undocumented. So we know we have issues to face. I guess I'll just kind of leave it at this, is I have an issue with putting everybody on the same level. So it's kind of hard. Those people that go through all the right channels and go through a lot of work and a lot of time to get here legally, and those folks that are, whether political asylum or other things, that need us to take care of them. And then there's a group that might be undocumented just from sneaking across our borders. And I don't think that we need to give them exactly the same rights. We have to be careful so that we're not benefiting some and making other people feel like they went through all the work for nothing. So it is a fine line, and I do understand the subtleties of the issues. So I know, as Senator Murphy said, we're going to work through this process, and I don't frankly care about the federal government being involved. You know, Texas was the only people that did remain able to secede from the Union. I wish Minnesota had that, because on some issues like this, I'd say we need to take the bull by the horns. So, members, we kind of know what's going on here, and I think we aren't trying to be mean-spirited by any means, but it's an issue that you want to make sure everybody feels welcome at the level, but not give some benefit to those. And it might only be a small portion of folks that don't deserve it. But if they don't deserve it, they ought not to get the benefit. And I have a problem with how we're crafting this mm-hmm. without being able to figure that detail out.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Devil.
I think Senator Jungbauer's comments strike the tone that I would like to see coming mm-hmm. from folks with different perspectives. And rather than question individuals' patriotism or who's deserving and who's not, I think we have the opportunity to craft an actual solution. I don't think it's in this room here today, at least not in the form that would be supported by this committee. I would move that we lay this bill on the table.
Senator Dibble has moved to put the bill on the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Dibble, you have Senate File 3109. Senator Sieben, let's take your bill up next, House File 1209. Senator Dibble. Senator Dibble, Senate File 3144.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to present Senate File 3144. Mr. Chair and members, Senate File 3144, trying to solve another problem, we're in problem-solving mode today, would simply require that at the time at which the Central Corridor LRT is built, that if a particular station adjoins or should provide access to the pedestrian skyway system, downtown St. Paul, obviously, it should continue to provide that access to that skyway system. The practical problem that we've discovered is that and you can see the maps that are handed out in your packet, the Bremer property that the corridor is going to bisect would eliminate, through the construction process, an elevator access to the skyway system downtown. And so we'll seek to make sure that that elevator access remains. It's important, of course, the way to get around downtown, St. Paul and Minneapolis, is through the skyway system. Getting up there is difficult for those with disabilities. And so that's the bill in a rough description.
I don't see any maps.
We have Mr. Cardenas here from Advocating Change Together, who can provide some testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rick Cardenas. I'm the co-director of Advocating Change Together. And again, as you can see, the blue part on the map is existing building. That's the Bremer building right now. However, the Bremer building was purchased by the Met Council and is scheduled for destruction. The Met Council is indicating that this would be a betterment. However, defining the term betterment is kind of what I'm looking at in what betterment is. There are, right now, in that Bremer building, there are, the pictures will show, there are two existing elevators within that building. And to me, the analogy of that is buying a dozen eggs and only finding that you have 10. So you need to replace them. It's a part of the cost benefit that we have LRT, but you don't have to purchase the vehicles separately, as well as the access here. That's I hope that becomes clear. The other E's, the other yellow E's that are around there are where the nearest elevators are to get into the Skyway. And unfortunately or luckily, St. Paul is based on the Skyway system. And the Skyway system is where you want to get to and where you want to get down from if you get onto the LRT. So within the, as I indicated, within that blue frame are two elevators probably, and I haven't been able to see, but I know there are two sets of stairs, and there are probably more stairs than that. The building is actually half of the block, and this is not the scale, nor is the drawing to scale at all, but it covers half of that side of the block. Also, have Cliff Potes, who would like to testify and indicate how he would maneuver this situation with the LRT. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Cliff Potes. I am a member of South Africa's Minnesota SAM. I ride the city bus and I use Metromobile. I've also written the LRT in Minneapolis and at the airport. I look forward to writing the LRT to the Capitol in downtown St. Paul. It has been pointed out to me the main downtown will not be accessible from the skyway, either up or down, unless you go to another building or parking ramp across the street or down the block or even two blocks to get into the skyway. My mobility issues are getting worse and worse. Skyways are easy to get around when you're in St. Paul. I am really in favor of putting elevator access to the main downtown station. I can't understand if the mayor council brought the Bremer building, why they gotta tear it down. It seems to me it solves their access problem and it makes it easier to convince the feds that they make ADA standards. When they tear that down, it's going to be very hard to convince the feds where they're ADA compliant when they say in rainy or snowy or freezing rain or snow, you got to go two blocks down. And I've been downtown St. Paul many times. Rush hour is a bad time to use wheelchairs or walkers to get across the street. I hope you do the responsible thing and make sure they do the right thing from the beginning and not have to redo it, which would embarrass you and me and the whole state. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Volz and Mr. Cardenas. Senator Dibble, this bill has to go back to Finance Committee if it passes here.
Mr. Chair, yeah, there is a fiscal note. I don't know if it's in your packet. It's $1 million.
Right.
Don't know where that money is going to come from. Every time we turn around, we think of a new thing to spend on the Central mm-hmm. Corridor LRT. You know, Mr. Shetman is in the room. I don't know if they're going to come say it's $1 million. We don't know where it's coming from. That's not a problem to necessarily be solved in policy committee. Mm-hmm. We can move this to finance and have some more conversation about it. I would appreciate
yep.
that.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, has the Met Council already rejected doing anything, or isn't this still part of planning phase?
Senator Dibble.
Or has this already been decided that it's not going to be done unless somebody comes up with $1 million more?
I think that statement is more true than not true. A lot of the costs have already been certified, identified and certified, part of the package that's being compiled in order to qualify for the full funding grant agreement. That's due to be issued in early September. I don't know. Mr. Shetnan can answer the question with more precision.
Yeah. I'll do anything if you can answer the question.
Excuse me, where are you? Sorry. No, that's fine.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Judd Shetnan. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. And this may be unpopular, and I am we really respect and do everything we can for the disability community, and especially with our Metro Mobility Service. And we know how accessibility is our number one goal as well as theirs. However, the Skyway or vertical circulation access that this bill is discussing is considered a betterment, particularly because there's no vertical circulation at that station right now. I know it's reflected that Bremer Bank has a has an elevator. However, that bank will be removed, and we believe the proper way to finance this vertical circulation will be whenever the city or a developer comes forward and decides how they want to develop that, because that area where the Bremer Bank is taken out and that there's a parking lot right behind the St. Paul Athletic Club. Once that is developed, that is when that access to the Skyway should take place. And Mr. Cardenas and others, I know I responded in the House to this, that there is a fiscal cost to this, and since it is not part of the project's budget, we don't have the dollars to be able to finance that. And we believe that the appropriate time to do it would be when the when that site is developed, and that will be done either by the city or by the city of St. Paul or by a developer. And I'm not quite sure what else to tell you.
Mr. Shetland, when you folks were looking at the route and everything and decided on a route, did you know that the that location there with the Bremer Bank, did you know that was going to be torn down? Or
Mr. Chair and members, that yes, we knew it was coming down. We're taking the Skyway down as well as part of the construction. However, we are replacing that. So the access to the Skyway will come back.
So, Mr. Shetland, so you're going to put the Skyway back up, but no way for people who are disabled to get into it?
Mr. Chair and members, that is not the case. There is access at adjacent points here. However, again, to make the proper access at that location should be done when that is developed, because otherwise we could be adding vertical circulation somewhere where it doesn't, where it'll eventually just be torn down because it's not developed that way. And since there isn't vertical circulation at that particular point right now, it is considered a betterment. And Mr. Chair and members, trust me, I know how sensitive this is, and we are in a point where we don't know how to fund it, and we also think that the proper time to do it would be when it's developed. And I'm as I have mentioned, it's you know, I'm sorry.
Yes.
And just response. Most of that block, the eastern half to the right, that block has been vacant for over 25 years. So talking about the redevelopment of this area, I know I'll be long gone before it's, I mean, I think, unless we turn around and then we have a new bonding bill or something and put something there, right?
My next bill will
The next bill will be the bonding bill. A larger issue is that because St. Paul is a skyway city downtown, all people won't be able to get into the Skyway. If you look at those elevators around in all of those blocks, only one of those is available to people. Those buildings are locked up at 7 o'clock unless you want to get out. If you want to get out, you can get out. So that means anyone who gets off of the light rail transit cannot get back in to the Skyway. I know it's just arguing a policy that it's going to cost money, but again, the cost benefit of this, we say LRT is important, but also getting up and down to the rest of the world is equally important. So the benefit of LRT is always going to be should be within the cost. You know, and I know the Met Council came up with $1 million as a fiscal note, but I don't know how that came about if they weren't thinking about that. So that's, you had to be thinking about it at some time and make a decision, we will not put an elevator in. So that had to be from the beginning of the plan.
First year that I was in the legislature, I found out how much elevators cost when we decided to put one to be in compliance at the church down in Frontenac. And you wouldn't believe how much a little lift cost to go one floor. It was astronomical.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
And indeed, I know they're expensive, but Mr. Chair and the rest of the committee, I know they're expensive. And I'm not saying, what I'm saying is the cost really doesn't matter. The cost does not matter at all, because the broad plan of this system says there should be access to the thoroughfare, and the thoroughfare is the skyway, not only for persons with disability, but many, any person wants to get into the, everyone wants to get into the skyway. So it's not a surprise that the skyway is there and that people want to get into it.
Especially in January. So, Senator Dibble, we can send this over to finance. In the meantime, I believe that we not only need to work on the money end of this, but also with Mr. Shetnan and folks, and see if there's a way that we can't get some access without having folks go two or three blocks. I mean, it's just Mr. Shetnan, I think everybody in the room has been downtown, you know, a month and a half ago when the snow was flying, and there was, it's just, you know, for people who have disabilities, it's just impossible to get around, I mean, on the surface street. So we need to fix this somehow.
Mr. Chair, members, I appreciate the comments about the only way to get through the skyway after 7 o'clock is to go out, because you cannot get in. And our offices are downtown, and working at the legislature, obviously, things go a little bit later at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. So there are issues there, and I'm happy to continue the discussion.
They actually take the chains off of you at night and let you go home? Is that?
Yes.
All right. Senator Dibble moves Senate File 3144 to be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you. Senator Sieben. Senator Sieben, House File 1209.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is, again, the...
the removal of the sunset, right?
It's removal of the corporate deputy registrar sunset that's been for this committee multiple times. But I'm happy to stand for any questions from committee members. I also do have an amendment that... just makes an additional reference to statute. So if I could please move the A1 amendment.
Senator Sieben has moved the A1 amendment. On that amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Sieben, can you fill us in on 317A?
Mr. Chair, no, I can't, but Mr. Hurst, I bet I could.
Mr. Hurst.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Jim Hurst. I represent the Minnesota Deputy Registrar's Association. The additional statute references the nonprofit corporate statute, and there actually are two or three deputy registrar offices that are incorporated under that statute. So we wanted to be all inclusive with this.
Okay, Senator Sieben moves House File 1209.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I was paying attention quite quickly enough, but I do have the A2 amendment I'd like to offer.
Senator Dahl has the A2 amendment. We'll have the A2 amendment distributed. Senator Dahl, what does the A2 amendment do?
Mr. Chair, members, this is an issue that's in my district that has to do with the movement of one of the offices of the of a deputy registrar. It's our county site in Burnsville, currently located in a shopping center that the lease expires in 2011, and the county would like to move it into the library that's being renovated just down the street. It's about 2 miles away from the existing site, and based on current statutes, it's other agencies or deputy registrars can express their concern over that, and they have to get a waiver to do so from the department, and they were denied that waiver, so we're hoping the committee here could look at this and see if we could provide an exception for this moving this office to the library. And I do have a testifier to explain a little bit more about why we would need to do this. Mm-hmm. Gene Erickson with the county, if that's appropriate, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, we can take some testimony if. And Senator Dahl spoke to me about this earlier, and Senator Dahl knows that this is kind of an uphill fight here. So, please.
Mr. Chair, members, Dakota County, as you heard, is requesting an exemption from the proximity rule of the Department of Public Safety. We're asking to move the current deputy registrar location 2 miles so that it's co-located with the Burnhaven Library, County Library in Burnsville. It would be serving the same customer base. It's in the same community, and it's in the same county. Dakota County, as other counties, is always looking for ways to maintain or improve customer service while delivering service in a cost-effective manner. Senator Dahl mentioned that the lease is up on this deputy registrar site. And it is expiration of the lease coincides with the completion of the renovation of the Burnhaven Library. The savings per year to the taxpayers will be $57,000. When the county board started looking at the renovation of the library, they asked staff to include the license center in the concept. It is a model that's worked well at the other two county license centers. The one in Lakeville and the one in Rosemount.
And how do those two neighbors that you're going to be moving in on, how do they feel?
They submitted letters of opposition, believing that this move would impact their business. The Burnhaven Library, if you have been to it, it is not very easy to get to. They cited the fact that it was close to the Burnsville Mall, but in fact it's across the street and sort of sandwiched between a restaurant and a Kmart. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if people would be driving to the Burnsville Mall and see it and automatically turn in there. And in fact, if you look at the map, Amanda handed out.
Could you move the mic closer to you?
I'm sorry. Is that better?
Yes.
I'm so sorry. We have a map developed of the deputy registrar sites within Dakota County and those that are within 10 miles of Dakota County. And if you look over toward the left side where there is the star, that would be the Burnhaven Library. The red dot above it is the current deputy registrar location. To the right, the green dot that says Apple Valley is the private deputy registrar that submitted a letter of opposition. To the left, to the west, Prior Lake submitted a letter of opposition. In fact, we are moving a bit closer to those two. We're moving farther away from those in Hennepin County and in the northern part of Dakota County. The county is seeking to be cost-effective, provide convenient service and a number of different services to its citizens in one location.
Thank you. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Erickson, there was a provision in the bonding bill that unfortunately got a line item veto that was a cooperative facilities grant program that said exactly just what you're saying, that if different municipalities would come together to use an existing facility to renovate it so that they can deliver services in a more cost-effective way. And they actually, in the grant application, you had to show that you were going to save money and enhance quality. Then you would have been eligible for $250,000 had that gone forward. So I'm sorry that it was line item vetoed, even though this was a provision that Governor Pawlenty apparently introduced some years back himself. But having said that, I do support, whenever I hear about it, local jurisdictions' commitment to work more cost-effectively by providing services in a shared facility. I think that is the direction that we have to go. I think whenever you make changes, you're going to face resistance, but it's important to just keep going and keep your eye on doing what's the best for the people in your community.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, and Ms. Erickson, I'm not clear about what the problem is. Is this a structural problem that is getting you into a kind of a technical situation where there are rules in place to restrict close proximity of deputy registrars? Or is this a policy decision that has resulted in eliminating your particular location and you're asking to survive that elimination?
I believe it's a technical. It's the technical aspect. We requested of the Department of Public Safety a waiver to the rule that requires a 10-mile radius around all deputy registrar sites, and you can see on the map that that seldom happens.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator,
Ms. Erickson, if this doesn't go through, where does that put you?
If this does not go through, we are considering an appeal to the Commissioner of Public Safety, and the county board would have to decide whether they want to continue to have the deputy registrar site and extend the lease or negotiate a new lease or to close the office.
And Mr. Chair, and Ms. Erickson, how many people, if the decision was to close this down for some reason, how many people who are currently being served by you would no longer have a place to come to?
I can't tell you off of the top of my head what the transactions are. I know that it's hundreds of thousands of transactions a year. I can tell you what the population is around the current location. Given a minute, maybe. I think it's like 28,000 are within a 2-mile radius of the current location.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on the Dahl motion to amend? All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? No. Motion does prevail.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair.
Now you've got a hitchhiker. So House File 1209, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. State and local government. You got another stop now. So on that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
We're going to take a brief recess so that we can change the tape. The committee is in recess.